The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
After a busy first hour, fantastic conversation with Keith Donovan. Truly a remarkable look about the look into the NCAA. We move on, and we'll talk some a little bit about the SEC East during this hour with Alan Taylor of The Athletic and Chip Towers, who's joining us now from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Yesterday on this program, Heather Dinich from ESPN slammed the SEC East, saying it's one of the weakest conferences, weakest divisions in college football, saying the Big 12 had a better shot at getting two in the CFP than the SEC. No love for Georgia. Chip covers Georgia. Chip, great to have you on, and I hope you weren't listening yesterday. It was pretty rough if you're an SEC East comrade. Good afternoon.
For bringing it to my attention, and, you know, that's kind of the season we're in right now. Everybody has opinions. I've gotten Phil Steele's magazine, and I've perused a little bit. I mean, but I can't sit here and tell you that I know that the East is going to be this, that, or the other right now. Nor can I the West. The fact of the matter, the West has generally been stronger, Paul. Probably as long as you and I have been, talking on the air, which is a long time. It's always been a little weaker in the East Division. Certainly, Tennessee's got a lot of problems right now. Florida's going to be down from where they were last year. Georgia, but that, you can't hold that against Georgia, I don't think. I mean, Georgia's roster is Georgia's roster. It doesn't matter what division you play in. And essentially, you got to line up and, effectively win them all, or short of that. You need to get into the championship equation, and I certainly think that's possible for Georgia, and I certainly think it's made easier with the fact that the East doesn't look like a murderer's row for them this year.
Yeah, and to me, Georgia really is not that much a part of this conversation for this reason. If they lose to Clemson and Alabama, I don't think anyone really cares. If they beat one of the two, then it would seem like that's enough. Don't you agree?
Well, I think so. I mean, I love the Georgia's opener against Clemson in the Duke's Mayo Classic, as they're calling it. And I think that's the game of the year. And what a fantastic way to start the season. But the reality is that, that's not going to be a season killer for either one of those teams. It looks like they're both going to be top five, at the very least top 10. Number five Georgia loses to number two Clemson in the neutral site opener in Charlotte, North Carolina, they can go on and win the next 11 and, play Alabama in the SEC championship game. Now, if you carry a loss into that game, having lost to Clemson and then you lose to Alabama or whoever from the West in the SEC championship game, that probably, as we're still in a four-game playoff, knocks Georgia out, as we've seen it's done in the past. But if you've beaten Clemson in that opener and then you run the table and then you lose to, say, an undefeated Alabama team in the SEC championship, well, now you got a different argument to be made. So we got a long way to go to get there, as you know, Paul. And, it is time to speculate as we get ready for SEC media days. But I think everything's on the table for Georgia. That's about all I can say with any certainty right now.
Well, let's talk about what this Georgia program looks like and also the noise about how important it is to win a title this year. You've covered that team a long time. You've been in that area a long time. Do you really buy that what some are writing? And I realize there are a million people saying these things, but you've seen them. What do you make out of this this target on Kirby Smart's back?
Well, I mean, I think it's a great narrative, or it's the narrative. There's no question that there's pressure, however you want to define that, on Kirby Smart and this program and all that, to win a national championship for the first time in 41 years, for sure. But, I read the other day where Steve Spurrier defended Georgia from there. There's a lot of teams that haven't won a national championship the last 41 years. And, you know, if just say the scenario we just discussed takes place again. So Kirby loses to a top five Clemson team in the season opener and a top five Alabama team in the SEC championship game. He's not going to get fired. I mean, it's not going to be there's not going to be any threat of firing. There's not any threat of being fired. So, you know, it gets kind of overplayed from that standpoint. Yes, the fan base of which, you know, I feel like I'm really attuned with. They want it worse than anything. And that's why, you know, basically Georgia has been able to do what they do in the area of fundraising and facilities building. They just christened their new $80 million football operations building. I mean, that's closing in on $200 million worth of facilities that Kirby Smart has gotten, you know, to play with since he's become Georgia's coach. Now, what does that say? It says Georgia's fan base really wants everything possible in place to be able to be in that conversation on a yearly basis. And look, every bit of that is going to be fundraised. It's not, none of that is coming out of Georgia's coffers. It's people in what they call the McGill Society and the Silver Circle and the Hartman Fund stepping up and signing checks for these things to happen. So, you know, certainly sooner or later they want to see something come of all those checks they've been writing.
And do you think, Chip, this is the moment this year based on the fact that the quarterback situation is in great shape? So many other things have gone Kirby's way, even after losing maybe his best and most skilled receiver. He seems like he's been able to replace most of those issues.
Yeah, well, he's certainly done a good job with the transfer portal, the recruiting is never relented since he's been here. So, and you know, as we discussed, I like Georgia's schedule in terms of they're going to be favored in every game, but perhaps that first one and perhaps the SEC championship game, depending on who the opponent is. And they've got all the parts. I mean, certainly I thought at the time when they lose George Pickens in spring practice to a knee injury, and you're like, you know, that's pretty tough. But, I mean, heck, they brought in Eric Gilbert, from LSU since then. And, you know, there's all this talk that he's getting work at the X receiver as well as tight end that George Pickens played. JT Daniels is a solid player, is a solid quarterback, maybe the best in the SEC. We'll see. We only have a four-game sample size, but, you know, the rest of it's all sitting there. And then, you know, Georgia's real nemesis was in the secondary. I mean, you had six defensive backs who were regulars, four starters, you know, go the way of the NFL or transfer. Well, you know, they picked up an all-ACC corner from from Clemson, an All-America defensive back from West Virginia, and they already had recruited pretty well at the position. So, you know, and I don't see roster building being one of Kirby Smart's shortcomings. Now, you know, we can talk a little bit about game day management and you know, calls in certain situations about that, but, you know, he's still a relatively young coach, and, you know, he's going to get better on those fronts as well.
Chip Towers with us. Chip, before you go, I want to talk about some of the things you've written lately about NIL, especially concerning JT Daniels. It's been a week and a half since it all began. What have you observed?
Well, I had a fascinating conversation yesterday, and actually it's posted on AJC.com now, a story with Aaron Murray. Can you imagine what kind of money Aaron Murray would have made when he was Georgia's quarterback under NIL? And it's interesting because that relationship that Aaron Murray started way back in 2013 and 14 has manifested itself now in a NIL representation deal for JT Daniels with Everett Sports Marketing. And, talking to Dan Everett, who owns that company, the president, he believes that JT Daniels can, depending on how the season goes, but being a Heisman hopeful and on a championship caliber team, that he could approach seven figures in the amount of money that he's making. Now, that's JT Daniels, and I think they signed Sam Howell from North Carolina, but they didn't sign anybody else. Everett Sports Marketing didn't. So if you look at the rest of the Georgia players, I mean, I've seen several offensive linemen hawking Crystal Bacon cheeseburgers. I've seen a lot of different guys come out with kind of their own apparel brands. You know, Zamir White, you know, Z3 and Chosen One, and kind of little deals like that. But, you know, mainly it's the guys like JT Daniels on a national level, the quarterbacks and running backs who have national recognition that are going to benefit mostly from this. And that certainly seems to be the case on Georgia's roster, and so far as I can tell so far.
Just out of curiosity, if some of these guys start bringing in hundreds of thousands of dollars, I've heard seven figures for a gymnast. I mean, I'm just laughing at the prospects of not that a college kid's walking around with that money in his back pocket, but it is still pretty extraordinary, isn't it?
It is, but you know, if you think about it, Paul, the grand majority of the athletes that we're talking about here, I think you've referenced it on your show since all this happened. You remember AJ Green, you know, four games for selling a Letterman's jacket online, and Todd Gurley, four games for signing merchandise with some sports memorabilia dealers for $3,000 his junior year. That's what's happening more than anything else. I mean, Nolan Smith is a starting outside linebacker for Georgia. I think this week he's conducting a, you know, player skills camp down in Savannah. He'll probably get $100 a head for those kids. I mean, that's they deserve that, right? I mean, you know, it's his name. He's Nolan Smith. He knows football. He should be able to go out in the summer and get $100 from 100 or so kids and teach them what he knows about football. That's what's happening more than anything else. Now, there are a few. I mean, Georgia has a sprinter, Matthew Bowling, who has, I think, 1 million followers on Instagram or TikTok or one of the two. You know, there's certain people with certain brands that are just going to become millionaires during all this. But let's face it, these guys aren't regular students anyway. I mean, you know, these guys, you know, Trevor Lawrence didn't walk around the Clemson campus like every other player did. You know, he was a celebrity, and this just is letting them cash in on that celebrity.
When's it going to start hitting sports writers?
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
That's, you know, we just keep getting passed over and passed over, Paul. It's only guys like you that I know. You're the only sports writer I know who's really made it.
Well, anything I say to that will be misinterpreted by the sports media who've had a busy enough week as it is. Hey, Shep, great to have you on. I hope to see you soon, and it's always a pleasure.
Yeah, see you over in Hoover.
Well, you got it. We'll see you next week, a week after next. Chip Towers, always great to have one of them. Covers the Dogs. We'll get the reaction from Florida in a few minutes. And we have not had a chance to talk to, I think, a caller in almost 45 minutes. So if you want to get in, do it now. 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We have had two guests this week. Terrence Moore, 2 days ago, from former Atlanta writer. And Keith Donovan, an hour ago, who is an author and documentarian, pretty much forecast in very subtle ways the end of college football as we know it because of NIL. And I'm really interested and maybe a little bemused at how little reaction there has been. And both have talked about, while they think it's good, while they're happy that young players are getting something out of it, they're extremely concerned about the locker room. They're extremely concerned about money run amok. And I'm wondering about the fans. Do you think it is as serious as they do? I mean, we're talking about two guys who have covered college football collectively for 90 years. These aren't just two guys who rolled out of bed and grabbed their iPhone and started tweeting. These are two guys who are serious journalists, whatever that means anymore. It may not mean anything. And both have almost the identical take. And we've heard it in bits and pieces on this program, but not particularly not a lot of call. What Moore said, he said, I asked him, what are college athletics going to look like after NIL settles in? He said, it's going to be a disaster. Keith said a similar thing, except in some ways he was harsher. College sports has survived a lot of things. It's survived the explosion of money for coaches. 23 years ago, I think Steve Spurrier and Bobby Bowden were the first coaches in college football to break seven figures. $1 million a year 25 years ago. Now Saban's 9, 10, Dabo same. I mean, Saban could make 50 and it wouldn't make any difference. We don't care about that. That's not a big deal. I mean, that's not affecting too much. Although it does affect the players a little bit when they see assistant coaches making $2 or $3 million and they're getting that. But I'm really interested in the fans. And I'm not talking about a hard line, hey, I played in 59 for Auburn and I was on the 62 Georgia team. I'm talking about just the perspective of all of us who are college football fans. And these are two smart people, like them or not. I don't care what your politics are. I'm just interested in whether you agree or not. Jeff is up next in Columbus. Hey, Jeff.
What's going on, Paul?
We are doing great. How about you?
I'm doing good. You remodeling your kitchen anytime soon, Paul?
My kitchen?
Yeah.
No, the kitchen's in pretty good shape.
Because just to give you a little further update how things are turning into a mess, I had a guy told me he's got to wait 20 weeks for his kitchen cabinet.
Well, no, I had a guy here the other day updating.
It's a problem, Paul, out there. I've been telling you for 6 months.
No, you're right. I had a guy at my house about 2 weeks ago. I need to update a TV. He said it could be two or three months.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. Nobody, it's incredible. It's going to be a real problem. That's why I've been trying to keep you and the listeners.
No, by the way, I very quietly about 3 months ago looked for a new house somewhere. Not anymore.
That's right.
I mean, I gave up on that.
I called you. Right. You better get a hold of Cheerleader. She'll cut you a deal. Isn't she a big-time realtor?
Yeah, no, I was just one day during I-Man's call, I was just speculating on Zillow, seeing if I could find a new house, and I gave up on it.
Yeah. Hey, Paul, I called you like two and a half weeks ago, and I told you that the combination of NIL and basically an NCAA governing body that's been basically ruled out of business, I'm really concerned it's going to be a train wreck. And I told you that, quote unquote, it's going to be a train wreck. And the reason I think that, Paul, I don't think it's the kids. I don't think it's the students and the athletes that are going to theoretically benefit from it. Like I've told you time and time again, these colleges and these conferences are competitors. They're not adversaries like the NFL. and I don't think they're going to be able to police themselves, Paul. They've proved time and time again they're going to cheat when there was a police out there. I think it's going to be a complete disaster, and it's going to be from the college side. They're not going to be able to control themselves, in my opinion. What do you think?
Well, no, I totally agree with you. And right now, listen, you're in business. I'm not suggesting
right.
you do something nefarious, but you push the envelope in a competitive world as far as you can take it. And,
right.
sometimes you go over that line, and if you
deal.
Look around, you may pull back. But there's nobody watching the line right now.
No, exactly. And these guys have proven they can't control themselves even when there was somebody watching. But that's the thing. I mean, it's a competitive world. And I think these conferences, even more than the schools, I mean, look at all the drama we're having over the playoff situation.
No, they don't care.
Don't
I mean, listen,
you
can just put, you know, whether it's Big Ten, SEC, Ace. If the Big Ten's doing something that the SEC isn't doing, then the SEC wants to do it.
Right. I heard somebody up here today getting all squirmy up here because Louisiana's grade mark or something. I don't know all the details. And I'm thinking to myself, if you're worried about that in the game of recruiting, good luck. I mean, everybody's going to be looking for a loophole, and everybody's going to have a company that's going to throw some money out to somebody, and then it's on. And then it's you know. And like you say, in the business world, that's commonplace. But you have to have some structure. Like I say, the NFL has some structure. They're adversaries. And I don't see that same structure now that the NCAA has been ruled out of business. Who's gonna control that? That's the thing that
bothers me. I don't think anyone is. And listen, not to – I always hate to keep going back to the same point, but – we saw last year when everybody was out for themselves about having a season,
right.
how the only thing that matters to the ACC, SEC, Big 12, Big 10, whatever, is themselves. They don't care about you, and you don't care about them. So
no.
And this is far more serious.
Look how quickly a competitive Ohio State, Paul, look how quickly a competitive Ohio State that wants to compete with the big dogs and does compete with the big dogs, how they won against the conference that they're in.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
If it wasn't for Ohio State,
absolutely.
The Big Ten wouldn't have played last year.
Now, you're going to have to explain those outliers out in Lincoln because they think it was all about them.
Oh, come on.
By the way, is Nebraska in the Big Ten or not? Would you confirm that for me?
I don't think they – I mean, I don't even think they – when I think of the – when I hear the word Nebraska, I still think Big 8, Paul. I'll be honest. I think Maryland and then the ACC.
Yeah, you're right. I mean,
that was
one of the
time.
Funniest things in the world is Nebraska fans trying to take credit for getting the Big 10 to come back and play.
Exactly.
And they came after me
because I gave
Ryan Day the credit and Justin Fields, and they said, what about us? I said, who cares about you?
Right. I mean – UCF fans and Nebraska fans and pretty much Michigan fans too. I mean, they just don't quite understand, Paul, why you don't give them the credit. I mean, they don't deserve the credit, and you know it, and I know it.
Well, now UCF has moved into the SEC up in Knoxville. They have a branch office there.
That's right. That's right. They need to go to the SEC East because I heard that's weak this year, Paul.
According to Heather Dinich, it is.
Man. How are you allowed to have her on the show? I can't understand. On the SEC network, she's allowed to say that?
Well, we snuck it in on a week when the network was dark.
Yeah, Sankey must have. Where's Sankey? In Bahamas or something? He must not have got
yeah,
the,
I think
got
he's in Ireland or somewhere.
Yeah, he must be over going to the British Open or something. But
good
anyway,
hey, Jeff,
I do agree, Paul.
You.
I'm really concerned. And like I said, it's not because the kids are making a little money in their pocket. I think schools are going to be able to contain themselves. You know what I mean?
It's a great point. And we're going to keep talking about that because we've had two guests this week, one an hour ago, who just pretty much predicted the end of college football as we know it because of NIL. It's the other side of what we've been hearing about. Hey, it's great. Everybody's got a iced tea endorsement. Everybody's on Cameo. Everybody's got this. Everybody's got that. But two guys with a combined 90 years of coverage of college football for legitimate big-time places have predicted the end. More of your phone calls. You want to get in. Good time to do it. 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back, and it is great to have all of you here. More of your phone calls in a moment. It's also great to have Alan Taylor on the program from The Athletic. Alan, great to have you with us. So much to talk about. And we've been all over NIL, and I know that everywhere that is affecting different schools. How, as we say hello to you, how has NIL gone down the first week and a half at Florida?
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Well, we've got a five-star defensive lineman who has signed an endorsement deal with a moving company called College Honks. You got that going on. He played a little bit as a true freshman last year. You've got another backup linebacker who was a four-star guy 2 years ago, has yet to really see the field, and he's now signed on with an agency out of the Mobile area, you know, probably based on potential. So, you know, I think it's interesting as the same way coaches try to project how a kid is going to look 3 or 4 years down the road. I think you're seeing some of these agencies, at least from a marketing standpoint, try to get some young guys who haven't even been proven on the field yet, much less, you know, the Sam Howells and the Spencer Rattlers of the world.
Very interesting, because it just seems like it is now the conversation piece of all. Let's get to the Gators, and we've had this conversation a few times about Dan Mullen and recruiting, and I know you've written about it and looked into it. And you know, he's done well. He's done extremely well, considering he is not quite in the same league as Kirby Smart and even Ogeron or Alabama. Let's talk about what you learned in looking into that recently.
Yeah, you know, you kind of have to set a ceiling and a floor for a program, I think, to judge how well a coach is doing, right? And I think in Florida's worst year, their recruiting class really shouldn't fall out of the top 15. And in the best year, they ought to be, you know, one, two, or three, right? And so, you know, his four-year run here has been sequentially 14, 9th, 9th, and 13th. So, you know, that's the bottom half of the range that, you know, I sort of subjectively assigned to them for where they should be recruiting. And, you know, I don't think that staff is high-fiving each other over being ranked 13th in the country last year. They know that even when they were 9th, they were 4th or 5th in the SEC, and they want to, you know, wedge back up into that, you know, at least that 6-7 top five range, even, which is, you know, with their adjacency to talent, with their brand, with the fact that they've got some tradition here. Obviously, you know, that needs to happen. And so that's the goal, and they're taking the big swings. And so far, you know, only one five-star athlete each of the last 2 years. And I don't get caught up too much in the five-star guys, because I think your high four-star guys are probably hungrier and maybe even have a better track record of getting to the NFL. But certainly you build momentum for your class on some level by getting these five-star guys. You know, they're in the running for a few, but it's going to tell over the next couple months whether they land a guy like, you know, Walter Nolan, or the safety Kamari Wilson, or the receiver from Texas, Evan Stewart. So it's definitely a proving point, because, as you say, for what the rosters look like, people are really happy with Dan Mullen's one-loss record. They just want the roster to look better so they can win more.
Alan, is it Dan Mullen not being able to get those five stars, or does he have a different approach?
You know, he sort of wore the label for the first couple of years here as being in that Mississippi State mindset, where he can take a three-star and develop them into an NFL first or second day draft pick. And certainly that's a big part of coaching. But again, when you start off with a bigger, faster, more highly rated kid, you would like to think that the upside is more easily reached. And so I don't know. When I talk to parents of kids who have committed here, and that includes transfers, they rave about how Mullen is no nonsense. And so, you know, I'm working on a theory here, which, as you know, is very dangerous, that maybe he's a little too truthful with kids about where they are and what they can do. And maybe that actually plays better in the transfer portal, when there's a little less BS and a little less flash and dash, and you have guys who are, you know, have been around the college game for at least a year or two and understand what's real and what's not. Because he's gotten 3 5-stars out of the transfer portal in the last 3 years. So if you were to add that to the recruiting ranking, suddenly Florida looks pretty good. But the ones coming out of high school, as of yet, you know, haven't arrived in the volume that the Gators fans want.
Talking to Alan Taylor about the Gators, and moving on from the recruiting issues, it does seem like, you tell me, that Mullen survived a tumultuous year where it was the best and worst of times. The good times continue. Everyone remembers going to Atlanta and playing Alabama better than anyone. But have the bad times been excised? The crazy comments, the NCAA issues, and the total no-show in the bowl game?
Probably not, because you got to remember, in a pandemic year where really the only access to coaches and players that we had was via Zoom, well, every Zoom press conference was amplified in its importance and in the number of eyeballs on it. You didn't have those side conversations with guys. You didn't have those casual sort of interactions that color stories and lead to other things. So, you know, if he said something in that 10 or 15 minutes where he was on a Zoom call with everybody watching, there was no follow-up. You know, it was a bad year to stumble over your words and make some weird proclamations. And, you know, I've heard some fans say he doesn't take losses well. Well, if he did take losses well, I think they'd be upset that was happening to some degree. You know, I mean, Nick Saban's not the most charming fellow after losses. And of course, he doesn't have to go through them very much. So I think there's a narrative that probably hurts Dan with fans a little more than I think it hurts him with actual football players. But, you know, there were definitely a couple of stumbles last year that it seemed a little goofy. And, you know, the players, again, the ones that are here and the parents I've talked to, think that's a little bit oversold. But it's the perception. I mean, you and I talked about it twice during the offseason, so you can't just brush it away as big nonsense, you know?
Let's talk about this year. We had Heather Dinich on the other day. She doesn't have Florida in the top 25 preseason. I think Phil Steele was here the other day, said the same thing. I know those are fighting words if you're a Gator fan, but what do you think?
You know, I could see this being a 10-win team, and I could see it being a 7-5 situation where the backup quarterback Anthony Richardson is in there by week four or five. So much of it hinges on what Emory Jones can bring, and he's been patient. He's now going into his fourth year of college football. So far, he's been primarily a Wildcat type of change of pace quarterback, but he's got a terrific arm. It's just a matter of trying to ratchet up the accuracy. And, you know, I think he's got a very high ceiling, and he's also in a spot with a kid behind him to where if things go badly in week three against Alabama, that, you know, maybe you do look toward the future. You know, I know they do love Anthony Richardson behind him, but that's an issue. You know, the O-line lost its most steady performer, Stone Forsythe, who went in the fifth round, and lost another senior as well. You got a couple of sixth-year guys who haven't played up to their talent level, and DeLance and Stuart Reese, a lot hinges on that. So I guess my point is, you know, flip that coin, right? Heads, you're 10-2, and you're playing Georgia, LSU, and Alabama competitively, and maybe winning one or two of those games. Or things go south, and you know, Mullen's trying to find a way to score points, and they're scrapping. I know the over/under for those guys is right at 9 for wins, and that allows for a loss to LSU on the road and Alabama at home, and a game against Georgia, which looks really tough because I think Georgia is the team to beat in the conference next year.
Let's say Florida has a good team but loses to Alabama at home, loses to Florida, to LSU on the road in Georgia. Is 9-3 okay in the new view of Florida fans?
It probably depends on how you get there. You know, if you lose three tight games, it's palatable. If you get waxed, and there seems to be this gap between Florida and the elite programs of the SEC suddenly, then probably less so. You know, that would still have them beating Florida State at the end of the year, and so that would, you know, soften the feelings a little bit. Obviously, long term, that doesn't get it done, but you know, if you leave 9-3. With hope for what can be done in 2022, then maybe, you know, I don't know. It's tough because, as you know, 9-3 feels at these schools feels a lot worse than it looks like on paper. But I don't sense that there's a lot of optimism around the Gator fan base for this to be another SEC East title team. I think there's hope that they're surprised, but I don't feel like, you know, they're banking on being in Atlanta. So, if there is disappointment coming, maybe it's a little easier to take.
You just said something that's so amazing when you think about going back to the Spurrier-Bowden era. I completely forgot that Florida State's on the schedule.
You know, when I look at these recruits and you look at a kid, and quite honestly, the first thing I look at is, well, is Georgia, is Alabama, is LSU after them? Then I have to remind myself, okay, there is a school 2 hours up the road that has a pretty good tradition, and if they get it going again, things are going to change. And so, that such a road back for North Element crew is going to take. And I think that's part of what frustrates Florida fans is that FSU hasn't been very good lately, and Florida hasn't ascended to the degree that you would like to when your main rival is down.
Alan Taylor from The Athletic covers the Gators. We hope we'll see you very soon, Alan. Thank you for joining us, and it's always a pleasure. We're heading to a break. We are almost 2 hours in, and we are coming back with more guests and more phone calls.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
John is up next as we round out the second hour. Good afternoon, John.
Thanks.
Hey there.
Hey, I missed the first hour and a half of the show, and as you were going to a couple of breaks ago, you said there was two influential men that said that NIL is going to be the end of college football. Would you mind going back on that, please?
Yeah, no, we had tonight, or this afternoon, we had Keith Donovan on, who's a well-known sports writer turned author turned documentarian, and then Terrence Moore, former Atlanta writer said it 2 days ago. They both have pretty well. Keith said today. He thinks it's going to be a disaster because it's going to completely disrupt the locker room.
Okay, well, Paul, thanks for going back on that. And let me get your opinion. I don't think it's good. Paul, I'd like to get your thoughts on that. And thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. I think the way we ended up with it isn't very good. If the NCAA had done its job, there could have been some parameters put in that would have made it controllable. But it's not controllable, and there's no compliance apparatus. We're up against a break. Back with more.